It's time, Fort Wayne. Your sports, your station. It's the Sports Rush with Brett Rump. Covering all the topics that hit a nerve here in the Summit City.
Clark, 11-yard touchdown!
Only on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Now, here's your host, Brett Rump.
The greatest, most interesting, most important person of all time.
You are incredible!
Older than one.
Yeah, well, you're half right.
What is this, amateur?
This is gonna be huge.
I believe this is gonna be our final sound.
Just when I think you said the stupidest thing ever, you keep talking.
I think that's the worst thing I've ever heard.
That boy ain't right.
The simplest way to put it, I have problems.
Welcome to the alleged show.
It's Tuesday in the Summit City, hour number two of the Sports Rush. I'm not Brett Rump, but I'm Derek Decker. Brett Rump is on the road with the Dons as they are traveling to take on Norfolk State coming up tomorrow night in the CIT Championship. You can hear that on our air at 6:45 for the pregame 7 o'clock tip-off tomorrow as the Dons compete for a CIT Championship. The PFW women have won not once but twice in the WNIT, as they got their first ever bid to the WNIT and their first ever postseason win. And now second win, they beat Cincinnati in a blowout on Sunday. Just a huge win for the program, beating their first ever Big 12 team. We're going to talk to head coach Maria Marcusano about that win and what it means for the program. They've also tied a record high in wins in the history of the program. So we're going to talk about the Dons on the women's side coming up a little bit later on in this second hour. Also, we're going to chat about what's going on down in Bloomington, how Indiana can revamp their roster, and what portal options are open. And we've got a lot of things that have happened today and yesterday in terms of portal action and also who's declared for the NBA draft. We're going to break that down coming up also on later on in the second hour. But right now, we're going to tackle some of the rule changes that have happened in the NFL that have been approved. These are approved rule changes. If you were looking around this morning, you may have known that the hip drop tackle has now been banned. That is something that the NFL has looked at now for a couple of seasons. It is an unnecessary roughness penalty. So 15 yards on that when that happens this year. Teams are given an extra challenge now if they win one of their first two attempts, but you do not get a fourth attempt. So that's another thing. No matter what happens, you do not get the fourth. You've got the double foul clean hands rule. That's one of the things that also came out. We'll break that down in just a second. I don't really know how defenses are supposed to attack that. Unfortunately, I think that puts the defenses at a significant disadvantage. Also, the trade deadline has been moved back a week, past week 9 now instead of after week 8. But the biggest thing that has happened is the rule change addressing kickoffs. This is straight from an ESPN article that came out today on what's going on with the kickoffs. I think it breaks it down pretty well. During this 2024 season, kickers will continue to kick off from the 35-yard line, but the other 10 players on the kickoff team will line up at the receiving team's 40-yard line. At least 9 members of the return team will line up in a setup zone between the 35 and the 30. Up to 2 returners can line up in a landing zone between the goal line and the 20-yard line. No one other than the kicker and returners can move until the ball hits the ground or hits a player inside the landing zone. Touchbacks are marked at the 30-yard line. No fair catches are allowed. In the event a team wants to attempt an onside kick, it will have to inform the officials of its intent and would then be allowed to use the NFL's traditional formation, but no surprise onside kicks will be allowed. That is straight from the XFL. If you've watched the XFL, you have any familiarity with what they tried out, that is literally the exact concept that was drawn up in the XFL. And so that is now coming to the NFL. That is a big-time rule change, and I want to get your thoughts on it. 46862 is our Parkview Sports Medicine text line. You can also text that number and text the word FAN to sign up for breaking sports news and interact with our shows, be a part of a conversation. And the conversation right now is, what do you think about this kickoff rule? Because this is, again, a massive change in terms of how kickoffs are going to happen. Special teams have now undergone a huge change. How do teams sign return men? How much are kickers devalued or maybe higher valued in this situation. There are a lot of questions to break down. And Adam, I want to get your thoughts, too, on what's going on here with the rule change. Now, this is something that's really been coming for a long time. We've known it was going to happen. I think it probably took longer, in my opinion. I thought onside kicks would be eliminated and then they would go for the, you got to get a 15-yard play or whatever to get the kickoff. I thought this would happen a couple years ago. It has now happened. I didn't know exactly what the solution was going to be. Turns out that alternate football leagues do have some influence on the NFL, and they are stealing a play out of the XFL's playbook. This is big.
It is big. I personally don't mind it. I'm not much of a traditionalist when it comes to football. I only got into football in the mid-2010s, so not that I'm not interested, but I think it can be fun, honestly. I mean, I'm not here to be like, oh, it's going to be the worst ever, and I don't like it, and it's different, and it's blah. I think it still can provide for some exciting plays, and it eliminates guys running all the way across the field full force into somebody, which
And
that's what they're hoping to eliminate.
That's exactly right. That's the biggest thing, is trying to cut down on concussions. We have seen return rates plummet to begin with the last few years when they extended the touchback to the 25-yard line, when they made the fair catch rule. Anytime inside the 25, you could do that. I mean, it just eliminates a huge number of collisions that happen in the sport. Now, again, there are places for collisions in football, but kickoffs are by far the most dangerous.
Right. I am wondering if there will be a bit of an adjustment period for the specialty teams on these new kickoffs. But I think they'll get the hang of it. I mean, it's not like they're completely rewriting the game. It's just you're starting farther down the field, closer to where they'll be receiving the kick.
Yeah. The other interesting thing to me here is wondering how this is going to affect field position. Because if you're kicking off from the 35, you can't fair catch. Touchbacks are to the 30. So there's a lot of incentive to not kick it just through the end zone. Like, you're not going to want to do that and give the ball at the 30 every time. So how do you try and pin deep? How do you try to deal with that? Now, again, if you are having a hard time visualizing this, it's one of the challenges of radio, but nobody's moving, okay? So when the kickoff happens, nobody is moving. The only person that can move is the kicker, and then obviously the return men can get in position to get it. But the blockers and then everybody that's on the kicking team, nobody else can move until the ball is caught, and then the return starts, and then you can start.
Yeah, it's almost kind of like a pitch back to like a running back sort of play, since you have to wait for everybody to be moving.
Right.
You have to wait for the receiver to have the ball, and then he runs, and then the defenders are kind of where they would be if it was just a running play.
Yeah.
So
it's a lot like, I don't know, there's hard comparisons across sports, but if you like watch lacrosse, it's almost like a face-off in lacrosse. Or hockey is a decent example, where the puck drops, like you have to wait on that to happen, and then once those two guys go at it, then it happens. And then you can start moving and playing. But it cuts down significantly on the risk of concussions. That's what the NFL is set out to do here. Also, another rule change just coming out this afternoon, and this one is also big. The NFL will now allow replay officials to move into the area of penalty enforcement for the first time. So they're not allowed to initiate a formal review on intentional grounding, roughing the passer, or hits out of bounds, nor can they suggest a flag be thrown, but they will be authorized to suggest a real-time reversal of a penalty on specific objective aspects of a play when clear and obvious video evidence is present, according to the rule. And of course, previously, replay officials advised officials on calls as catch, no catch, possession, down by contact, and that's advice, of course, that the on-field referees can accept or reject, and that's one of those things. Okay, remember here, one of the nerd things that I have an interest in is officiating. I am an official in high school football, so obviously you don't have to deal with replay or anything like this, but if you've ever noticed the last couple of years, sometimes there will be a pause after something, really easy, it seems like. You think you're going to get a review, and then the white hat will announce, after discussion, it has already been changed, and we're going to go back to whatever it was. Well, that is the replay official getting in the ears of the officials and saying, this is clearly not a catch. There's no reason for a review here. We know it. We're going to overturn it. If we go to the formal review, initiate a timeout, that's a waste of time. We're going to speed up the game and say, okay, we already know it's off. We missed that one, and now we're going to fix it. And that's what the after discussion comment means from White Hats. In my opinion, this, Adam, opens the door, and I am always extremely leery of not only reviews But just rule changes where you have things. It's like protesting an outer safe call or whatever in baseball after the game has already happened. It's not a protestable thing, by the way. Mm-hmm. That's why the perfect game never happened, because it's not a protest. You can't protest a judgment call.
Oh, Jim Joyce.
Yeah, right, right, right. Tigers fans cringe everywhere. But
yeah,
this is, in my opinion, creaking open the door into a place where you do not want to go. Because remember, they tested out the pass interference thing and trying to review that and all that. You are testing the waters here of approaching a place where you're going to try to review everything. And that is not a place that you want to be. Like,
no.
Some calls are going to get missed. Okay? Some stuff happens. You don't need the – I mean, what are you attempting to do here? If you're trying to play the game in a vacuum and say, we're just going to play one play at a time and every tiny missed thing, we're going to review every play because, well, that could have been, and maybe we should make a decision on that, and let's think about it 5,000 times. Like, you don't get the opportunity to do that as a player. Like, if you drop
right.
a pass or something, it's over. You go to the next play, right? It's the same thing with officiating to a degree. Now, again, I think replay can be effective. I think it's useful for certain situations. I'm almost always against the expansion of replay, and I'm certainly against the expansion of, like, protesting something and them just being able to, you know, subjectively say, that definitely wasn't a hold. We're going to take that away.
Mm.
I don't like that at all. I get it. Like, it's upsetting when somebody misses a call and it really hurts you. I understand that. But at the same time, you cannot open this door because you will end up in a place that you do not want to be.
Too much game stoppage, too
yes.
much reviews, not
yes.
enough action.
And again,
on the field.
And then just deciding, you know, what's enough to just they're saying clear and obvious video evidence is present, specific objective aspects of a play. That's still kind of broad, so we don't know exactly what that means yet, and then that'll be clarified before we get to the season. But it also will just some of it will take time to like work out during the regular season. Like, you're gonna have to go through some of this. There are going to be some growing pains with that in particular. Like, the kickoff is a big adjustment, and there will be some changes in that. It'll take a little while to get used to. But I'm just telling you, I think this thing has flown under the radar versus, like, the kickoff, which has made all the headlines today. This is a really big deal, and it has the potential to really change the game going forward. Text line 46862. Tell us what you think on the NFL rule changes, but for right now, we got to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk to PFW women's head coach Maria Marcusano on her team's two big wins, the WNIT so far. They are getting ready to host St. Louis, another home game for the Dons. We're going to talk about that and much more when we come back on the Sports Rush, 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Second out of the Sports Rush here on this Tuesday afternoon. Derek Decker is in for Brett Rump. He's on the road with the Dons. The men's team will play for a CIT championship tomorrow night out at Norfolk State. So Brett hopping on a flight to get out there. And the Dons will play on our air at 6:45 is the pregame, 7 o'clock tomorrow night here for the CIT championship against Norfolk State. Meanwhile, we are joined by women's basketball head coach Maria Marcusano after a dominant win over Cincinnati to move on to the WNIT Super 16. Coach, thanks a lot for joining us today. Big time win for your program on Sunday.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks for having me. Sunday was a lot of fun. We executed at a really high level. Obviously, it helps when you're hitting a few shots, but you know, defensively, we were locked in, got the stops we needed early on to kind of separate ourselves, and came out in the second half and didn't take our foot off the gas pedal. It was a lot of fun, and really proud of the girls and the way they performed on Sunday.
Yeah, 23 wins for your program now this season. That ties the all-time record for wins and extends the D1 era record. You know, we've talked about this a couple of times, but it just continues to build. Not just one postseason win now, two postseason wins this year for your team, and it just kind of marks the turning point of a program that you have led here. And of course, I want to get to know the mind of your talking points throughout the locker room at this point, because you have experience coaching in the NCAA tournament. So what has the mindset been trying to get your kids ready for each and every step of this WNIT and making it to a point where it's postseason basketball now?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest hurdle was, you know, getting over the disappointment of not making the NCAA tournament.
Right.
And once we were past that, You know, the girls have been excited, and they've been, you know, locked into our game prep and staying sharp even when we were still waiting to find out who we were going to play. We've got a really veteran group and a group that, you know, has not been to the postseason before. These girls, some of these girls have been in school 5 years, and this is their first taste. So regardless of it, you know, not being the NCAA tournament, it's still a high-level, you know, postseason tournament that our girls are excited to be in. So really it hasn't taken much, you know, motivational speeches or anything like that to get them ready. It's really just about trusting our work at this point. Our on-court chemistry has grown so much that, you know, the coaching has become easier and easier because they're just meshing out there. You saw it on Sunday. I didn't call a lot of sets. We didn't have to run a lot of our offense. It was just them out there making reads and playing off of each other. And it's a lot of fun to watch when you get to that point in the season.
Well, you get St. Louis coming up on Friday night, and you get them at home. And that's another big step, getting to host a second postseason game. You know, how big is that to be able to play inside the friendly confines of the Gates Center, and then kind of preview the Billikens and what you're expecting out of them Friday night?
Yeah, it's huge. I mean, obviously, you know, Fort Wayne's pretty crazy about basketball. We've had great support all year long, but we've also played better at home. You know, our record at home, you know, speaks for itself. And so to be in the comfort of our gym, the gym that we get shots up on every single day, is awesome. And it's going to be a huge task. I mean, St. Louis is a very talented team. They're very good size across the board. They're extremely athletic. They scored at a very high clip. You know, they mix things up defensively, but offensively, they're extremely talented. And I'm familiar with that coach. She was on the East Coast when I was out on the East Coast. And her teams are very well coached, and they execute at a high level. So it'll be a tough challenge for us. You know, they said in their post-game interviews that they've been watching us for a while now, kind of expecting to play us, which I took as a compliment. But also, you know, they're going to be ready to roll. They've been watching us and scouting us. And, you know, like I said, it'll be a tough challenge. But this time of year, everybody's good. You know, anybody in the postseason is solid. They're going to have good players. They're going to have talent. They're going to have good coaches. So I wouldn't expect anything else at this point, you know, this late in March.
Yeah, absolutely. And St. Louis has played a couple of really close games already in the WNIT. 5-point win at Central Arkansas on the road. They just won at home on Sunday against Northern Iowa by 4 points. So you know they're pretty battle-tested. They also had a really strong win in their conference tournament over VCU, who had a great regular season.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, I know, you know, Horizon League people are familiar with Green Bay. They, you know, you and I beat Green Bay early on in the season, and then they just knocked off you and I. So for, you know, them to beat such a quality team to get themselves to this point, you know, we're all very familiar with the caliber of talent and just, you know, the entire program that Green Bay is. So that's the kind of talent we're playing this point in the year. You know, they're very well orchestrated team at this point. The machine kind of runs itself, and they're in the same position that we are where they're playing their best basketball right now.
Well, Coach Shayla Sellers continues to show up for you at this point in the year. Over 1,300 career points, top 10 in the program's history, fourth in the D1 era. She goes for 22 with five dons and double figures on Sunday. You know, how important has she been as a leader over these last couple of weeks making the postseason push?
She's always important, but, you know, especially in this last, I would say, month to 2 months of her career, she's really just settled into a calmness that, you know, she has put in the work. And we might be in the postseason and there might be pressure that this could be her last game, but she's not playing like that. She's playing like she's put in the work for the last 5 years, and she's ready for this moment. And you saw that against Cincinnati. She came out strong, hitting some shots, had a couple high-level moves in the lane that not many people in our league are making. But defensively, she continues to just lead us. I mean, she is the bar when on the defensive end. She battles. She does all the little things that don't show up in the stat sheet. And she's our leader. You know, she's our heart and soul. So she continues to be that for us. And I expect nothing to change as we continue down this stretch.
Coach, you know, I think everybody that is still left in the WNIT knows your team can make three-pointers at a really high clip. But 12 triples, 41% from three, again, shooting it well on Sunday. What was clicking in that department? What was flowing well in offense?
Yeah, I think when we can get out and run in transition, that's going to be extremely helpful for our flow. We forced a couple early turnovers that allowed us to get out and run and space the floor. And when we're able to do that early in the game, it gives us more confidence from three and other areas. We had our inside-out game going. You know, Destiny, our point guard, has been phenomenal in this postseason at just putting the ball in our shooter's hands at exactly the right moment. You know, her assists over the last 5 to 6 games had just been through the roof. So I think it's a combination of a lot of things. Like I said, our on-court chemistry has just continued to increase throughout this late stretch of the season. But like I said, I would attribute the threes Sunday to us being able to get out and run early against Cincinnati, and our defense is always going to lead our offense in that category.
Multiple wins in the postseason, you know, no matter how this thing ends, reaching the and of course your goal obviously to continue winning in this thing. What can this do next season? And of course, you know, nobody's thinking about next season right now, but what can this do for this program going forward now that you've built to a point where you've got multiple postseason wins and are doing a lot of good things at the end here, all the wins here, of course, throughout the course of the season. But what can that do for returning players and also incoming players for next season?
Yeah, I mean, it does a couple of things. Obviously, we're continuing to raise the bar and set the standard that this is kind of, this is what we do. We play in the postseason. And, you know, it's a special thing. It doesn't just happen every single year. A lot of work goes into that. A lot of prep, a lot of recruiting. A lot of factors go into making the postseason every year, but it continues to raise the bar, and set that standard. And then, you know, two, the big thing is it makes kids look at us. You know, recruiting has already picked up. I mean, we're getting, you know, even kids that we've been recruiting all of a sudden seem a little bit more interested. Kids that we weren't recruiting are now contacting us. So it helps recruiting. It helps the brand of your program. It helps your entire school, honestly, with the publicity that you get. But like I said, you know, we're just trying to move the program forward each and every day. And in this third year, we've done a lot. And obviously, we still got one goal that we want to continue to try to get each year, and that's to make the NCAA tournament. But if we're not doing that, we're going to be doing this, and then it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, and talk about, you know, kind of the prestige of this tournament. You know, obviously on the men's side, it's looked down upon. It's a bigger field on the women's side. There are a lot of premier programs that have played in this. We were talking with Dylan Sin earlier this year. The turning point, one of the turning points for Indiana's program back in 2018 was winning the championship. And then, you know, now they've made the Sweet 16 three out of the last 4 years. So talk about what a jolt that can do to the program, knowing that this is a pretty elite field with a lot of quality teams. You're talking about big conference teams here, and making it deep in this tournament can spur things on in the next couple of seasons.
Yeah, I mean, the experience is invaluable, you know, no matter what tournament it is, but especially in the postseason when, you know, your last game is on the line every single game. So, yeah, it might not be the NCAA tournament, but it's postseason, it's competitive, and there's actually quite a few statistics that say that, you know, teams that go on to have success in these other tournaments generally go on to compete in the NCAA the following year. Now, that's not always the case, obviously, but at the end of the day, our kids are getting invaluable experience competing against teams outside of our conference who are extremely well-coached and talented, a high level of basketball. And, you know, I keep telling our kids, you know, we're playing games instead of doing postseason workouts, and there's nothing better than actual game experience. If we were in postseason workouts right now, we'd be diving into strength and we'd be diving into, you know, the weaknesses of the individual players. But there's nothing like actual game experience, and we can't replace that. And it's been awesome for our growth in the past. Even last year, making it to the Final Four of our conference tournament was huge and propelled us to this year. And, you know, I think the more experience you can get, it doesn't hurt you. It only makes you better.
All right, couple more days to prepare for St. Louis Friday night. What are you hoping to see out of your players in practice these next couple of days?
Yeah, I mean, our kids are awesome at locking into the game plan and the little tweaks that we have for each game. So I'm excited to see our prep work go into that. It's been extremely competitive these last couple weeks at practice, which makes it a lot of fun. Our girls like to talk trash to each other and really compete in the drills that we put on through practice. So, you know, continue to keep that level of intensity up so that we're game ready, lock into the game plan, and then obviously stay sharp on the offensive end, continue to get shots up. We were in the gym today. We lifted, we watched film, and we got shots up. And then the next 2 days will be all about St. Louis. So those days are fun. You know, that's what you miss the most when the season's over, is spending that quality time in the gym with your team.
Head coach Maria Marcusano of PFW, wishing you the best of luck on Friday night for another win and a chance to get to the Great Eight of the WNIT. But congrats on a couple wins so far, and thanks a lot for taking some time to join our show today.
Yeah, for sure. If you're not on spring break, I hope to see you all at Fort Wayne at our game on Friday.
That's right. Gates Center, 7 o'clock on Friday night. That's head coach Maria Marcusano of the Mastodons, who have won twice in the WNIT, looking to make it to the Great Eight. Again, it's a bigger field in the WNIT than it is on the men's side. And some awesome turning points. Again, 23 wins, Adam, for this program, tying a school record, already extending that Division I era record. This will be one season that is talked about for a long time. And yes, they didn't make the NCAA tournament, but this is the next best thing here, is winning games and looking really good in the postseason in a quality field. They've already got a big-time win. I mean, it's a statement to say you went on the road and beat a Big 12 team 84-58. That's no joke.
No joke at all, and it is just hard to understate how much of a turnaround this Purdue-Fort Wayne women's basketball team has experienced under the head coaching of Maria Marcassano. And you heard it there. She's just very dedicated and very focused and just a fantastic coach for Purdue-Fort Wayne.
Yeah, and just so easy to talk to. Just a great ambassador for the program. It's been awesome to see how much that has grown. And I think also, you know, we talk about the Caitlin Clark effect and women's basketball and big time. We were talking about Sweet 16 with IU and Notre Dame and all that. Like, it has a trickle-down effect to the mid-majors as well. Now, as we've seen major programs really explode the last 4 or 5 years in terms of interest, that will continue to trickle down. And to have Coach Marcassano and these Dons on the forefront of that could be a really big deal in the next 5 years.
Absolutely. We even saw Purdue-Fort Wayne play against Iowa and Caitlin Clark in a neutral site this season. So it's good that these kind of teams are playing against those bigger teams as well earlier in the season, and just keep on expanding the interest in any way you can.
Well, we certainly appreciate her taking some time, busy week, preparing for St. Louis on Friday to join our show. But that means we got to take another break. When we come back, we're going to start wrapping things up here on this Tuesday edition of the Sports Rush. I'm going to pitch a couple ideas of what IU can do to be productive in the portal. There's a lot of movement going on in the transfer portal right now. Khalil Ware declaring for the NBA draft. We're going to break down what it all means and how Indiana can try to improve the best that they can, and what Mike Woodson might need to do to try and get a couple of shooters here in the portal on the other side of this break. You're listening to the Sports Rush. I'm Derek Decker, in for Brett Rump, with Adam Lundy on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM.
This is Lara Overton from the Indianapolis Colts. You're listening to the Sports Rush with Brett Rump on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM.
Hi, Lara. I'm not Brett, but I'm Derek. And hey, it was a great part, great time to be a part of the Colts broadcast booth, the last game of the regular season. Heartbreaking for the Colts, by the way, but I enjoyed being there. Matt Taylor had me down. It was a great experience, and hanging out with those guys, really cool to see behind the scenes of an NFL radio broadcast. Really cool stuff. I'm really feeling, Adam, at a point where, again, we've already had rain today. We've talked to a couple of really good guests, Dylan Sin of the Journal Gazette. We had Maria Marcassano just on. I'm really feeling unfocused. You know, I want to talk about Indiana and where they can get better in the portal and all that, but I'm just starting, my focus is really waning today. And I don't know how great of a segment this is going to be, but we'll give it a shot. Indiana needs they have some needs in the portal. No question about it. One of them is replacing Khalil Ware, who just went into, put his name in the NBA draft. And of course, we hadn't known that was the case for the last week or so, 2 weeks. Kind of figured that was going to be the case. This took zero people by surprise. You know, there were certainly some – this is like a classic thing that college basketball fans do, right? Mm-hmm. They say, oh, no, he needs one more year to develop. Now, Indiana could have offered him a nice NIL deal, and I'm sure they probably did. But Khalil Ware probably feels like he's got a great chance at being a first-rounder, and I would agree with that. I think he's probably a late first-round guy. I don't think that's unreasonable to think – I don't know where else you want him to improve in his game either. Like, for some players, it makes sense. Like, Mbako makes sense to have another year in college. Like, he could go to the NBA now, but I think it would benefit him to get better in college. And he can make some money while he's doing it. But for Ware, like, literally, what else do you want him to do? He can bring the ball up the floor. He runs the floor well, finishes at the rim, mid-range shot. He can make threes. He rebounds, shot blocker. He's Miles Turner, basically, in a nutshell. Like, what else do you want from him? So, like, for Indiana fans, if there are any out there that say, I think he should have done another year, if you're one of those people, by the way, we want to hear from you. 46862 is the Parkview Sports Medicine text line. I completely disagree. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I do think he's going to be a first-round pick, and I also agree that there's just not a lot more that I think that he can add to his game at the college level. I think we've seen the kind of player that he is, mm-hmm. and I don't think he's gonna just suddenly add more to his game.
Yeah, again, literally, what else do you want him to do?
No, he's developed his archetype of the player that he is. He's developed his game into the kind of game that he wants to take to the pro level. And I think he's going to be drafted first round. So,
well, one thing that has become increasingly clear in Mike Woodson's first couple seasons in Bloomington is the fact that he has relied on a good five who can rebound and block shots. Those two guys, Trace Jackson Davis and Khalil Ware, both we expect Khalil Ware to be at some point, but Trace Jackson Davis currently a productive NBA player who has been in the regular rotation for the Warriors all season long and is making some serious impact as a rookie. A lot of folks thought his game wouldn't translate well to the NBA. It clearly has. They have found a spot for him. I don't know if he would work great on every team, but the Warriors have found a spot for him. And so all that to say that it is very obvious that Indiana has relied on an NBA-level, talented big man, All-American type. Ware wasn't quite an All-American, but that's only because he played in college for 1 year, really. I mean, he had the stint at Oregon. Didn't really count, didn't really improve his game much there, because clearly where he came from at the beginning, even where he stepped on the floor at the beginning of the season, it's like, how does this guy not get minutes in the Pac-12? And then he moves to the end of the season, and you can see even the growth in 1 year with Mike Woodson. And again, say what you want about Mike Woodson. This has clearly been a track record. You can't give him all the credit for everything, with Trace Jackson Davis wasn't even his recruit. But I think it's fair to say he took him to a different level to being an All-American and being a really borderline unstoppable player in the post. Though TJD and Khalil Ware are different players. Obviously, Ware can step out and make threes. TJD was avoided jump shots at all costs. Okay. Speaking of jump shooting, Indiana needs some three-point shooters at really, really badly. And here are some guys that they might try to go after. Okay, I've got some options for you. Malik Mack is in the portal. Indiana fans very familiar with that name from Harvard. I think he dropped 29 against Indiana when they played him at Gainbridge Fieldhouse. And Harvard led for a good chunk of that game, by the way. But he fits multiple needs for Indiana. He can hold, he can protect the ball. He is a guy who can handle the ball and run the offense. Indiana needs a guy like that right now. Obviously, Galloway has been serviceable at best at point guard in the very rare times that he's been in that position. But that is not a long-term option. Even though he's a fifth-year guard, it doesn't magically make you a better ball handler and like a guy who can – again, he's not a point guard. Galloway's not a point guard. So I don't care what anybody says. He should not be running the point. And if Mike Woodson fails to get a guy who can run the point in the portal, it will be an epic failure, and it will be one that may cost him his job at the end of next season. Okay, there's obviously a lot of heat riding on what Mike Woodson and staff do in the portal here. But Malik Mack is one of those guys. That's the only non-local guy we're going to talk about. Jalen Blackman has entered the portal. Okay, we all know about the season that he had with the Hatters and getting them into a spot where, man, they made some real noise. Great season for them. Obvious local connections. His brothers went to Indiana. Is that unreasonable for Indiana to get? Is that an unreasonable player? Does his game translate? Maybe, maybe not. He's certainly worth a flyer, worth contacting. Okay. Next spot, Connor Asesian. That's the name that's been floating around. That's the name that I think that's been brought up on our airwaves multiple times since he decided to transfer. Now, again, there was the backstory there earlier in the month. He was talking about how he was going to stay at Wisconsin, but we were kind of breaking down before the show, like, there were other circumstances there. You have to look at that in context, because he was being talked to from a reporter that was from Wisconsin and talking about, you know, how do you answer that question? Then he kind of like indirectly answered it, and everybody just took him to say, well, he's coming back. And so everybody just kind of like, well, forget about Asesian. He's coming back. There were the writing's been on the wall for weeks and weeks and weeks on Asesian. Okay. His minutes just plummeted this year. Went from 27 minutes a game to 7 minutes a game. Clear producer in the Big Ten. He is the most intriguing option right now. And, of course, guys are going to continue to enter the portal. There will be other guys out there. But for guys that may be realistic or have local connections to Indiana, Asesian is the one that brings, in my opinion, the most big game experience to what Indiana could have right now out of the portal. He's a shooter. He has a proven track record at Wisconsin, not this season, but last year. He did have that lagging injury he kind of dealt with on and off this year, so it did affect some of his minutes early on, and then it just never kind of came back. We don't know right now. I don't know. I'm not privy to some of these conversations, whether there was tension between him and Greg Gard behind the scenes. Not, you know, I'm not saying that that happened. I'm not even proposing that as a viable possibility. I'm just saying maybe that's what it was. Maybe it's just a matchup thing, and Wisconsin got comfortable with their rotations when a season's out. I mean, that happens to guys all the time. They fall through the cracks, and you know they hit a point where they're injured. Wisconsin made a humongous run in the middle part of the season. They weren't great at the start. They weren't great at the finish. They were actually pretty bad at the finish of the season. Yeah. They really limped to the line. Once they got to February, they just kind of completely fell apart. I mean, they were Big Ten contenders for the first six, seven games of the league.
Yep.
And people are thinking Wisconsin-Purdue is going to be the showdown that decides the league. Turns out Purdue runs away with the league, no problem. And Wisconsin's not even in the picture once we get over the halfway part. But they went on their run when Esiason was dealing with part of his injury. So maybe that's part of it. Who knows? Who knows? But he has big game experience and is a guy that Indiana could bring in right now and probably make an impact. Would he start for him? I don't know. I don't know. Maybe. It depends who else they get out of the portal. It depends if Mike Woodson gets late adds in this year's recruiting class, since there are currently zero guys in the class, in case anybody's forgotten. Connor Hickman is the next guy. He played at Bradley. He's a guy that is from Bloomington South, hometown kid. He is extremely interesting. And you mentioned it earlier today. Very, very good friends, close friends with Anthony Leal. They went to school together at Bloomington South. Heck of a team, by the way. I got a chance to see that team a couple of times. Bloomington South has such a great track record of awesome high school teams. And multiple guys have ended up playing at Indiana. Anthony Leal's been one of those guys.
Yeah.
That one could have some real legs to it. Now, a lot of people are kind of pointing toward Northwestern. Esiason's been pointed at Notre Dame with some Shrewsbury connections from the past. I mean, there's a lot of moving pieces here, but I think both of those guys have upside. Esiason and Connor Hickman are kind of going different directions, it feels like. Esiason, of course, has been connected to Purdue-Fort Wayne very clearly and obviously. Now, if Kaufman's able to land him, you're talking about an absolute home run hire.
Oh, yeah.
A home run get out of the portal, right? Mm-hmm. He comes back home. He could be a star immediately for PFW right now, okay? He is a dude that can make a splash at a mid-major immediately. In my opinion, he has enough proven track record that he can be picked up, whether it's Indiana or somebody else. I'm just saying, like, he should be pretty valuable in the portal, right? Maybe a few questions on whether he can stay healthy for long stretches. Mm-hmm. I think part of it was, you know, sometimes dudes from Indiana that have the small school background, you know, get swept under the rug a little bit and missed in recruiting by big-time universities except in state. Although Indiana's not a part of that. They have done a horrible job recruiting in the state the last couple of seasons. Don't even want to go there.
Right.
But Hickman is a guy that's coming from Bradley that definitely feels like he's going to take a step up to a high major program.
Yep, and he's got a visit on Friday with the Hoosiers. One more. Iowa guard Tony Perkins, as of an hour ago, is now in the transfer portal.
Fascinating.
6'4", 14 points per game, 4.5 assists, 4.5 rebounds. And he was the standout at Lawrence North.
Yeah, I always love how guys have you always wonder if dudes are going to transfer in conference.
Right.
I love those rivalries. Because then when Indiana plays Iowa next year, I mean, this is just hypothetical, but like when they would play Iowa or wherever any guy comes from, like that is massive. Same thing for Esiason. Like what if Esiason goes off for Indiana or Notre Dame, and they happen to have him on the non-con slate. Like, I love the movement in college basketball from that standpoint. I know a lot of people don't like the transfer portal. It adds a lot of stuff to the game, and it adds a lot of intrigue on multiple different levels. We got to take one more break. We'll come back, wrap up the show after this. It's a Tuesday edition, a rainy edition, of the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Wrapping up this edition of the Sports Rush, I'm Derek in for Brett, and with Adam, we've had a pretty fun show today. Got to give our hat tip and thanks for all of our listeners. Ryan listening in from LaGrange. We've had Whiskers text in. We've had all kinds of people tuning into our show today and appreciate your contributions and helping us out on the text line. Also want to thank Dylan Sin of the Journal Gazette for joining us to talk about Indiana women's basketball, a little Notre Dame too, and how the women's Sweet 16 and Elite 8 is going to turn out. And then also, of course, thanks to Maria Marcassano, head coach of Purdue Fort Wayne women's basketball. Now, if you were not with us at the start of the show, do want to remind you that if your bracket is busted, like a lot of people's, including mine, 1380 The Fan's second chance bracket is here. Your shot to win $100 thanks to Winner's Circle in New Haven. Pick the final 16 teams in the tournament. If you're already signed up for Bracket Bash, just click on the 16-team tab and make your picks. If you're not signed up, text the word BASH, B-A-S-H, to 46862, or you can sign up at 1380thefan.com. Well, honestly, it's kind of that slow part of the week. This is the one where you get all of that March Madness action last week on both the men's and the women's side. Some great games from Thursday to Monday, and then you got to kind of wait it out Tuesday and Wednesday. And games start up again on Thursday. We'll be talking more about that. But that's not the case for our local teams. In one in particular, the Macedons on the men's side, Wednesday night, tomorrow night, 6:45, pregame, 7 o'clock tip-off for the CIT Championship right here on 1380 The Fan. We'll talk to Brett Rump tomorrow, and we'll talk to you tomorrow. I'm Derek Decker, in for Brett with Adam on the Sports Rush, 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM.